Civil disobedience, I think you have to look at it in conjunction with some information, a lot of which is in the Old Testament, but a little of which is in the New Testament. We, last week, if you're with us in class, talked about some things relative to the book of Daniel. We saw some two different examples of civil disobedience. But let's go back there before we shift into some additional material. Let's go back to the book of Daniel and run some references, and then we'll pick up at least one from the book of Revelation. I want to go back to Daniel chapter 10 and see what we find in verse 13. Then we'll take a look at Daniel chapter 10, same chapter, but we want verse 20. After that, we will take a look at Daniel chapter 12. All we need there is verse 1. And then we probably want to go back to Deuteronomy chapter 32 and verse 8. Then we'll pick up a Revelation reference. This could be flipped. That's going to be Revelation chapter 9 and verse 20. If you're a Daniel reader, we'd like you to read all the verses because they'll be fairly close together. Anybody want to be our Daniel reader? We'll start with Daniel chapter 10 and verse 13. All right, Steve?
But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days, and behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I had been left alone there with the kings of Persia.
Okay, now this is a reference to some angelic activity. You read it well, Steve, but let's go back. I'm going to stop you. Just start again, if you would.
For the prince of the kingdom of Persia.
All right, that's enough. We're talking about a nation here. Which nation?
Persia.
All right, Persia, an ancient people. And it says there was something associated with Persia. What was it?
Prince of the kingdom.
There was a prince over the kingdom. Or we might use the word nation. Of Persia. Now that sounds like there was an angel, if you will, that had some kind of charge or some kind of responsibility with this nation. Now if you're reading that in isolation, you might just sort of skip over that and think, well, okay, that's kind of interesting and odd. But let's take a look from that same chapter. Steve, you okay with reading verse 20?
Then he said, "Do you know why I have come to you? Now I must return to fight with the prince of Persia. And when I have gone forth, indeed, the prince of Greece will come."
Okay, now there's this prince of Persia statement again. But in Daniel chapter 10 and verse 20, we've got a different nation, don't we? Now we're reading about the power of Greece. And not only are we reading about it, Greece, what else? We've got another prince, or we might say angel, associated with Greece. How interesting. And then let's go over here today to chapter 12 and verse 1, Steve. Two chapters later, what do we find?
At that time, Michael shall stand up, great prince, who stands watch over the sons of your people.
Oh, okay, that's enough, thank you. Who would you say the sons of your people are? What nation was that? All right, or God's people. We're just going to put Israel there. You want to read that once again, Steve?
At that time, Michael shall stand up, the great prince.
All right, so now we've got that word again, don't we? But what else is said?
Great.
All right, we've got Michael. We'll just put an M there. And he is a great prince. So, people, as far as nations, angel. That's really interesting. Well, let's go back to Deuteronomy chapter 32 and verse 8, but I don't want just anybody to read that passage. Is there anybody that has the ESV? English Standard Version. Oh, thank you, Don. You're the lifesaver today. Deuteronomy Deuteronomy chapter 32 and verse 8. Yeah, 32:8 in Deuteronomy. Okay.
Mm-hmm. When the Most High gave to the nations their inheritance, when he divided mankind, he fixed the borders of the peoples according to the number of the sons of God.
Okay. Now, we've talked before about the sons of God being angels. Here you have a reference to sons of God. Now, again, not every translation is going to read that way, so I do want to make that clear. There seems to be some question as far as how to understand that. But if the ESV is the version that's used, or RSV would be another one, the sons of God, they're associated with what? Would you read it once more?
When the Most High gave to the nations their inheritance.
Okay, who are we talking about? The nations, right? The peoples of the world, when he gave them their inheritance, that's kind of Acts chapter 17. We talked about this verse before, that God has had a hand in how far nations are going to go, what they're going to do. All right, Don?
When he divided mankind, he fixed the borders of the peoples according to the number of the sons of God.
All right. So we don't have all the information that we might like there, but somehow God has, when we think about, you know, the earth and, you know, all the nations and just kind of dividing them up, God had a hand in that. And just as we would have perhaps kings over different nations or peoples or different rulers, it also appears that angels have somehow been charged with having some responsibility in the nations of the world. When we start thinking about civil disobedience, I want to expand your horizons a little bit. Some of this is beyond my pay grade. I can't understand it all. We can't understand it all. But there are some hints that we do need to realize that we're not alone as we're thinking about the nations of the world. People have free will. Nations have free will. But you also see, certainly in the Old Testament, and then we've got this Revelation chapter 9 and verse 20 reference, which really kind of thickens the plot a little bit. Somebody want to read that for us? Revelation 9, verse 20. All right, Betty, thank you. I can see your hand there. And the worship is associated with what? God or something else? All right, idols and demons. Now here's kind of my jumping off point. I can't go much further than this. But it does seem that in Revelation chapter 9 and verse 20, that, and you see this, we talked about the two beasts from Revelation. Remember, we got the beast of false religion. You've got the evil beast of civil government. And the devil and his helpers are able to use those. As you think about what you have here, different angels, if you will, associated with different nations. Let's think through that as far as we can go. Are all angels good angels?
No, some are by the devil.
All right, some are certainly working on behalf of the devil. Are all nations, quote unquote, good nations? Or let's back that up. Are all nations good nations? No. I mean, you have some that are relatively good, and then you have some that, I mean, they, you look at For example, ancient Assyria, they were a vicious people. And today you still have some nations which are quite vicious. So maybe it's safe to say that when we think about angels, especially from Revelation chapter 9 and verse 20, that there are some evil angels associated with certain nations and they want to promote things. And then some other angels associated with nations that are more righteous. You do, however, see from Daniel that there was some kind of struggle among those heavenly creatures when it came to the nations. Persia and Greece are specifically identified. Thus, when we think about civil disobedience, I think it's important to consider, though we don't have all the facts, that while we try to do our stuff, there is, in the heavenly places, if you will, some angelic activity also taking place that we can't see, but they're apparently pretty busy doing some things, and we would suspect carrying out God's will. Now, let me toss this into there as well. As you think about Christians praying, do we pray for a nation? Yeah. Or could we pray for a nation? Okay, sure. What could we pray for? All right, and that's what Paul talked about in 1 Timothy chapter 2, wasn't it? Pray for the kings and all that are in high place that we may lead a quiet and tranquil life in all godliness and gravity. So he was doing that way back when. What else might we pray for?
Peace.
All right, peace is going to be towards the top of the list. Anything else?
That we make laws that all of us.
All right. Yeah, that we can have laws which will be just and fair, that we will live in an honest society, that the laws will be conducive to allowing us to have peaceful lives and be able to worship and so forth. All of those things. And perhaps that is involved in this process here, that angels had a hand in providentially, not miraculously, seeing that through. What about, though, and Donald, take your hand in just a second. What about the opposite? Could the opposite be true? You might live in what kind of nation?
One that subject or wants to keep your press down and no freedom and no ability to worship God. And
what about Islam? You live in an Islamic nation. Good place for an evil angel, wouldn't it? Let's spread Islam throughout this nation and let's allow this nation to move beyond its borders and so forth. So I think you can sort of see in a general sense the good angels over there in the quote-unquote Christian nations or the conservative-leading nations, the nations that are focused on human rights and things, and definitely angelic interest in nations which would be evil. All right, Don, we'll start with you as far as any questions or comments.
Well, I'm just going to make a comment. You talked about praying for our nation. Most of all the prayers that I hear is that our leaders do everything in accordance with God's will. And if they do that, the rest of it falls in line.
Yeah, they do help set the tone and make things a lot easier, a lot harder. Anything else before we go back to Route 1 and civil disobedience? Gary?
Well, those leaders should have good ideas or put there are typically by the people to make sure that we have a hand in the peace of our country.
Correct. I can remember I've been preaching about a year and older couple had a van and they were going to load everybody up to vote. And they invited one family, and the good sister, she's deceased now, but she said, oh no, I'm not going to go. You can go vote, but God's just going to, you know, put in whoever he wants. Well, I was pretty new, and I just kept my mouth shut, but I thought, you don't really work that way in other parts of life. You want a job? Do you just sit home and expect that God's going to give you a job or put food on the table? So you're right. We do have our part. Angels, if you will, have their part. God has his part. And ideally, we'll all work together. But sometimes our part is not what's given. That it?
We are supposed to be servants of God. And part of that service is to vote for people that will tend to lean on God, tend to look to God for guidance. And this nation, many other nations are not that way, some are, but this nation has been founded on that fact that we can vote, and how we vote determines who guides us,
yeah,
as far as our part of it goes.
when you start looking at the nations of the world, you find some radically different systems.
Yeah.
And if we do have this angelic intervention, and that does seem to be taught, Old and New Testament, you can see how... Well, let me just toss this out. I've been working on this from kind of a different perspective. I puzzled over this for the longest time, and I think I kind of have figured some of it out. Let's go back to Luke chapter 11 for a second. Maybe this would be a good cross-reference. Luke 11:24. Here's a verse that has kind of been a curiosity thing for me for a long time. Jesus talked about the unclean spirit, who might say the demon. When he's gone out of the man, where does he go? Yeah, he goes through dry places, waterless places. He wants to be out there in the desolated areas, the area where you have wild animals. Now think about that for just a second. When you think about areas which are creepy, areas which are spooky, areas which are wilderness, what comes to mind? Is that the place where people want to go out? And, well, somebody might want to camp out there, but is that generally people where people want to build their house out there in Creepyville? It's not. Who wants to go out and build their house in a graveyard? I mean, nobody thinks about building their house in a cemetery. But that seems to be the place where these demons, when they were evicted, wanted to go. The places where people would say, that's spooky, that's creepy, that is undesirable. Think about in Mark chapter 1, verses 12 and 13. You remember Jesus was driven where to meet the devil? Yeah, how come? Why wasn't he driven into the city of Jerusalem? Why didn't he get driven into Galilee? Why go in the wilderness? Well, the answer seems to be in Luke chapter 11, verse 24, and the other things that we're looking at. If you are, and it's like today, why is nobody at the bar this morning down there drinking themselves half silly? Why'd you choose here? Are there some people down at the bar drinking themselves half silly this morning? Yeah, if it's open. Well, they could choose to be there, and we could choose to be here. Why? Because we gravitate towards one or the other. I mean, if liquor's our thing, we're going to be over there. And if we have an interest in spiritual things, we're going to gravitate over here. Well, wouldn't that same thing hold true here? If you are an evil angel, what's going to really attract you? I mean, the nation that's righteous? Not so much. I mean, you can go over there and say, we want to promote our evil stuff, but that's kind of creepy though for us. We don't like that. Remember, here's the same point from a different example. What did James say? Do what to the devil, and he's going to run. Flee. Well, he is going to flee, but why?
Resist
him. Because what are you doing? You're gravitating over here, and the devil says, that's creepy though for me. I don't like that. But if you start running over here, the devil says, hey. So you begin to see this in a lot of different passages. And you can really connect some interesting dots this way. And it sort of kicks it up literally and figuratively into a brand new realm when you think about angels having some involvement. And Paul talks about this a little bit in Ephesians chapter 6, the principalities and the powers, the spirit of the air and so forth. Betty, and then we'll take Ray.
The city passes through dry places, seeking rest and finding none. Does this not mean, too, that he went to the evil part of different cities and stuff, trying to find someone that he could infect?
Yeah.
Because there was so much evil, he found no one, so he came back to where he knew he could find
Yeah.
him.
And bring seven helpers that are even worse than himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, I want a place that's comfortable to me, and evil, comfortable with evil, righteousness, comfortable with righteousness. So you really see that dark dividing line that you are literally on one side or the other, right?
Would that be the reason why some people would say I have a guardian angel? Because they, you know, it could be a guardian angel over a certain area.
I think people do that. If you wanted to go down the guardian angel route, I think it would be probably safer biblically to say that there is a guardian angel for a nation. Maybe we could go that far versus an individual.
Yeah.
And there's that conflict because you got the good sentry over here. and they're trying, I mean, you were in a submarine for a while, you know, that you were trying to breach different areas for different countries, and okay, we're able to keep you out, but this time somebody got through, and that's taking place in the spiritual realm. So, yes. Okay, let's go back to the sheet. I want to finish that out. As I said, we finished up with the book of Daniel, so let's go back and turn to the prophets. Let's go back to the book of 1 Kings. This is point number 15. I'd like to look at 1 Kings chapter 18 and verse 4, then from that same chapter, 1 Kings chapter 18 and verse 17. After that, we'll move back a little further in Old Testament history. We'll go back to the book of Exodus. All right, our 1 Kings reference, as I said, that's going to come from the 18th chapter. Who'd like to read verse 4 for us in just a minute? All right, Gary. All right. Who is trying to kill the prophets of God? Jezebel. Now, who is Jezebel? What was her role? She's queen. If you're the queen, you're not the king, but if you are the queen, would you say that you've got some influence probably in government? Yeah. And if somebody is trying to oppose you, in this particular case, she was being opposed. She wanted to kill the prophets. There is this righteous man. He's trying to save God's prophets. Would you say that that was an act of civil disobedience? Did he go against the government?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, wasn't the queen per se. The king was certainly on board with this as well. So here is an Old Testament example in addition to what we talked about last week. Then we have King Ahaz in verse 17. Gary, would you like to skip down there and find out what we have about him? Okay. If he was troubling Israel, do you think that he was going along with what the king had to say, or do you think he was saying, we can't do some stuff that you want us to do? All right, he was going against him, and he really felt the effects of that when they didn't have any rain. Let's go back to Exodus chapter 1. It's a longer reading. I'll go ahead and pick that one up for us, starting with Exodus chapter 1 and verse 15, going down through 22. That is the end of the chapter. And the king of Egypt spake to the Hebrew midwives, of whom the name of the one was Shiphrah, and the name of the other was Puah. And he said, what do ye the office of a midwife to the Hebrew women, and see them upon the birth stool? If it be a son, then ye shall kill him. But if it be a daughter, then she shall live. But the midwives feared God, and did not as the king commanded, the king of Egypt commanded them, but save the men children alive. And the king of Egypt called for the midwives and said unto them, Why have you done this thing, and have saved the male children alive? And the midwives said unto Pharaoh, because the Hebrew women are not as the Egyptian women, for they are lively and are deliberate ere the midwives come, or before the midwives come unto them. And God dealt well with the midwives, and the people multiplied and waxed very mighty. And it came to pass, because the midwives feared God, that he made them households. And Pharaoh charged all his people, saying, every son that is born ye shall cast into the river, and every daughter ye shall save alive. This is an extreme example of government intervention in the lives of people. We have that same kind of thing, though, today, don't we, sometimes? Anywhere in the world? Government involvement in the family and children.
China.
All right, there we go. And how do we see it?
They really made it the one child at one time.
Yes, there was the one child policy. And you get pregnant, you know, take care of it by getting an abortion. You can have only one child. I don't know exactly how all the people in China have decided to live their lives. Many certainly did try to conform to that and have an abortion. In this particular case, though, who are the people who are engaged in civil disobedience? They are the midwives. And when the king lays down the order and says, if it is a male child, he can't live, all the females can live, what's their decision?
Disobey.
All right, we're going to disobey. Would you say if you were a midwife, that might have left you in a little bit of fear? I'm thinking, if I do this, if I save the male child, it might cost me my life, they might take my home, they might separate me from my family, I might be in prison. There could be a lot of bad consequences. And for some people, what might their thinking have been? It's just a baby. Wasn't that what we see with Jesus? Remember the religious rulers? He's stirring up all of this trouble. And, well, yeah, it would be taking a human life, but it's only one. So better for him to die, and we can keep things going in the nation, than for us to have all this trouble. And that is the attitude of some people sometimes. Steve?
Something I think of is the midwife could stay on the job and still see that children are born, male or female, or they could just wash their hands up and say, I'm going to go do something else.
That's true.
And leave it to everybody else to deal with.
That is right. They could have said, we're just going to separate ourselves from it. And Daniel, obviously, we talked about that last week. He could have said, okay, you know, for 30 days, I'm going to stop my routine and I'm not going to do anything that's going to get me in trouble. But here were people. It was right. The help was obviously needed. The baby's coming, so mom needs likely some assistance in that process. And they were going to follow through. They were going to help, and they were going to stand firm, stand fast. So it's not just men that need to stand up when it comes to things that are wrong, sometimes with civil disobedience. It also involves women. Anybody else have a thought there? Ray?
At that time, Egypt and things were killing animals, sacrificing animals. So was the Jews sacrificing animals. So they seen death on a close thing.
Sure.
It may have been that they were seeing the Egyptians and idolatrous worship and stuff. That, well, okay, we'll do it, but we don't like it.
Yeah. And there are people today who do make that kind of decision. Normally we wouldn't, but we're going to engage in wrong in this particular case. And it was kind of like John and the Mark of the Beast. There, back in the time of Rome, there were some people, if you worship the Roman emperor, just pinch a little incense and say, Caesar's God. That's all you have to do.
Yeah.
And if you do that, then you can buy and sell, you can have your business. But if you will not bow to the emperor and say, Caesar is God, you can't work. Well, you can imagine the pressure that put on families. And you can imagine perhaps some of the discussions in households. All you have to do is say, Caesar is Lord. You don't have to believe it. Just do it real quick. We can imagine all the things that people might have put forth as far as arguments. How are we going to feed our family? We're going to lose our house. And you can raise a dozen different arguments. But God said, you don't pinch the incense. You got to have faith in me that I will somehow see you through it. But that really puts to people the screws, so to speak, and some decide we just can't withstand the pressure. Steve?
It reminds me of today, murder is illegal, but abortion is illegal.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are some people who do the same kinds of things that we find. There are some people who go through with it, some people who walk away from it, and some people who try to get their hands a little dirty and say, okay, you know, you're pregnant, and we're going to go in there and help you with the baby and try to make things as good as we can for you. Okay, in that next chapter, Exodus chapter 2, if you kind of scan down through there, you've got this guy from the house of Levi, and he gets a wife, and the wife conceives, verse 2. She has a baby, and she sees that he is a goodly child. The end of verse 2, she hides him for how many months? Exodus 2:2.
3 months.
All right, hides him for 3 months, and finally she puts him in an ark. She can't hold on to him too much longer. The sister is standing afar off. Daughter of Pharaoh comes down to get him, opens it up, and sees that the baby's weeping. That's in verse 6, and she concludes that this is one of the Hebrew children, verse 7. And then, of course, well, Pharaoh's daughter wants to take him, go get the mom. That was what the princess commanded. Pharaoh's daughter, verse 9, said unto her, take this child away and nurse it for me, and I will give it, and will give thee thy wages. So the mom of the child is able to take the child, care for the child. The child grew, and she brought him unto Pharaoh, and he became her son, and she called his name Moses. If you stand for God, even if that means civil disobedience, expect a good outcome. Sometimes he will deliver you, and not only will he perhaps deliver you, what might he do? You're not only delivered, you're actually... Would you say that being raised in Pharaoh's house was a pretty good experience? I mean, you get the best of everything, right? You have all the privileges. You're going to... Language skills and everything. It's all there. So because they obeyed, they were blessed, and Moses was incredibly blessed. Anything that you want to add or ask before we pick up with Joshua? Okay, somebody want to read for us Joshua chapter 2, verses 1 through 5? All right, that'll be Lois. Thank you.
Then Joshua, the son of Nun, sent two men as spies secretly from Shittim, saying, "Go, view the land, especially Jericho." So they went and came into the house of a harlot, whose name was Rahab, and lodged there. And it was told the king of Jericho, saying, "Behold, men from the sons of Israel have come here tonight to search out the land." And the king of Jericho sent word to Rahab, saying, "Bring out the men who have come to you, who have entered your house, for they have come to search out all the land." But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them. And she said, "Yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from." And it came about when it was time to shut the gate at dark that the men went out. "I do not know where the men went. Pursue them quickly, for you will overtake them."
Thank you. Who's the lady that's the key person in the story? Rahab. And who comes knocking on Rahab's door? Oh, all right, you got some guys from the king, and they're looking for these Hebrews. What'd she say? Here or not here? Yeah, they've left. Where were they? All right, they're in her place, hiding. And she says, "Not here, but what should you do?" Yeah, run down the road, so to speak, and maybe you can catch them. Why? Now, this is where people, I think, draw some wrong conclusions. Was she committed for a lie or something else? She's included in Hebrews chapter 11, if that gives you any clue. I mean, when God talks about great characters in the Old Testament, here you got this woman, what's her profession? She's a prostitute. Well, you wouldn't think that would be something that God would say, well, you know, that's a good thing. And then she, along with being a prostitute, also does what in the story? She lies. You would think if there's anybody who's going to be condemned in Scripture, anybody who's not going to be listed as a person who's a great person, it would be her. But I mean, she's listed right along with Noah. She's listed with Abraham. She's up there with Moses. How can that be? Well, there is that. But there's another word that we want to add. Let me see if I can help you out. Hebrews 11, verse 1. Listen carefully. "By faith, Rahab the harlot perished not with them that were disobedient, have receiving the spies with peace." Anybody get it?
Faith.
She had faith in God. These guys need to be protected. I've heard what your folks have been able to accomplish, what your God has done, and now you're at our town. And I've got faith that you need to be protected. So the way that she exercised that faith, the lie certainly was not consistent with God's plan for human living, but the faith was so great as far as her saying, "You guys are on the right track," that she preserved the lives and, as mentioned, she's commended for that degree of faith. Civil disobedience, once again. Now, we would not want to use that, I think, as far as civil disobedience today. There's where we really get into some difficult things. Government officials come knocking at the door and they ask a question and you lie. Well, hopefully that would not be the position that would be put in. But still, the faith is there. Anything that you want to add or ask before we pick up with point 20? Ray?
Somebody come knocking on my door and was looking for a particular person that was faithful to God, and we would say, "They're not here. They left already." So that's the same kind of story that we got here.
Yeah. And there have been some cases where that has happened, and it could vary a little bit. Somebody comes knocking on the door and says, "Do you have a Bible?" Well, one answer is you can simply say nothing. Now, that probably would incline the people to go and search the place. You might be able to redirect the people. You know, there are just a number of variables there. You don't know exactly how the situation might occur. And then, too, you may be able to, as a Christian, remember Rahab is a harlot. She's a Gentile. She's not someone who is a Jew. When we think about 1 Corinthians 10:13, as far as being able to escape temptation, that those situations may not arise, that God may say, okay, this person doesn't want to lie. This particular set of circumstances would involve perhaps a lie. So it's not going to be a pleasant way, but providentially, he's going to die in a car wreck. Now, somebody says, well, I really don't want to die in a car wreck. But God says, look, I know you don't want to be put in this position either. So B happens, so A doesn't occur, so to speak. So like I say, there are just a lot of different ways that that can go. And living the Christian life, having God look after us, helps us in those kinds of ways. Betty, were you going to toss something out or not? Okay, just readjusting some clothing. Anybody else? Gary?
So the Elkhart police were had to put out a warrant for two people.
Okay.
And because of the area of town that I work, I knew where they had been staying or have possibly been staying. So I, through an anonymous way that the post office does, submitted that information. Well, if it gets back that I was the informant and I get questioned on the street by a thug, what am I going to say? And I would like to think that that's not going to happen because, one, I don't want to die at work, and two, I don't want to lie. So I like to think that that's just not going to happen.
Well, there I think we can go back and sort of take up with the answer that I gave to Ray. I think number one, praying about that would be a good thing, that that would just not occur, and have the faith that that would not happen. If it does happen, I think that there are ways that you can redirect people. For example, you know, I'm the thug. I come up to you and say, hey, did you turn me in? And say, well, who are you? Well, I'm so-and-so. Are you that guy? You know, there would be different ways perhaps to handle that as far as the spur of the moment. Or it might be, who knows, the guy comes up and you get a bee sting. And, you know, you're complaining about your nose. The guy's saying, did you turn me in? Hey, I need medical attention. And the bee shows up at just the right moment. Like I say, there are a dozen different variables there. There are 1,000 different variables. And if God was able to create the world, when his people try to do right, I've got the faith that he's going to help them. So it could be that the other guy gets stung and all of a sudden he loses his interest and you're able to just continue with your route. Or somebody, he begins a conversation and somebody hollers at you. Hey, mailman, I need to see you today. And you say, hey, I'm sorry, I got to go. So God can handle it. And that, I think, is where that needs to be put and can be put in faith. So, a good question.
Hopefully the man wouldn't even think that it was the mailman who did it.
Correct. No, I don't think that would be a very likely thought that would come to mind. I mean, you think about somebody that's a neighbor or somebody who's an enemy, perhaps, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Not that the mail carrier is going to rat you out. So, things we learn in Bible class. All right. Matthew chapter 2, verses 7 and 8. Who tried to kill Jesus? Anybody remember?
Herod.
And then in that chapter, Matthew 2 and verse 16, do we have an act of civil disobedience? What Herod say? He told who to do what? He told the wise men, you find him. And then after you find him, Betty's answer is the other half of that answer, then you come back and tell me. Well, he was obviously going to take that information and do Jesus in, and that didn't work out. Would then we say that the wise men were involved with civil disobedience? Yeah, I mean, the king says, this is what needs to be done. This is what I'm telling you to do. And when somebody says, we're going to do the exact opposite, it is civil disobedience. So that was even involved in the very early years of Jesus. When you think about the Lord upsetting things, you go into the temple, the Jewish temple, and you start upsetting the money tables. Would you say that that probably broke a couple of rules? It did. He was willing to do that. So, maybe not the most visible example of civil disobedience, but that is certainly one. You think about Acts chapter 4, verse 18, and Matthew chapter 28, verses 19 and 20. What did Jesus say? Go into all the world and preach the gospel, right? In Acts chapter 4, verse 18, there were some people who said, do not preach or teach in the name of Jesus. Well, Christ says, go and teach everywhere. Jewish officials show up and they say, don't talk about him in public. Is there a conflict? Yes, and if you're going to live a Christian life, you will need to make a decision, a determination. Are you going to do what those people are telling you to do, that is, shut down the preaching, or not? Finally, when we get to Acts chapter 5 and verse 29, what did Peter say? We must obey God rather than man. And that is exactly what they did. You find, and this is something we won't deal with for a while, but in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 32, as well as verse 33, we find that some people, officials, did put out an order to capture the Apostle Paul. Christians, they were not willing to abide by that order. They helped Paul escape from that. For us, and this is a little, I guess, tied to what we talked about last week as well as today, some cases of civil disobedience may be a little difficult to decide. And I freely admit that. And Ray, going back to what you raised as far as a lie, or Gary, what you raised as far as the lie, I guess if it were me personally and life were at stake, there could be some situations where I could potentially see that someone might fabricate some information to save a life. Now, like I say, that to me is a little gray area. Somebody says, well, you're saying that lying is sometimes true, sometimes okay. I don't really believe that. But if we're talking about life and death, in this case, somebody comes up and they've got a gun to the head of somebody. Just think about a gun to the head of a child. And fabricating some information could save the life of the child. And to take the illustration one step further, it is your child. Would you fabricate that information? That would be a very strong temptation. Once again, we'd pray that God would never allow us to be in that set of circumstances. But if that were, I do think that some people might fabricate some information, that they might tell a lie to save the life of a child. So like I say, there are some cases where it is very, very difficult. Pray about those cases. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 17, pray, 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 and be faithful to death.